Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how very grateful I am you chose to be with me on this April 4th day, 2020, as we take a look at relative. What is relative to people about the spiritual practice? And I can tell you, not much, but we'll talk about that here in a moment. I want to thank my sponsors for all of their kind donations. I want to thank them for their patience with the public, me, everything. As you might know, we don't get a lot of support for this kind of message. It isn't popular, but nonetheless, less than none. If you're listening, then it's important, and I hope you will consider being a sponsor and helping us sustain our radio program, keeping it on the air. We can't do it without your gifts. It is only through your tax-deductible donations that we are allowed to continue, and I hope that you will find the message not only relative, but meaningful to your own life. And I think if you really listen, you will. I've got some wonderful questions today, and it'll kind of show you where we're at. So if you're interested in helping us sustain our program, please come to the website at aspire.org. That's A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. And when you get there, you will see in the middle of the page, support. Click on that. A drop-down menu will ensue, and it will say, why support Aspire? And it will tell you all about Aspire, where your gifts go, why they're important, how they help people in hospice and children in our area who are poor, have little or nothing, people who are kids who are sick and dying, and what we do to serve them and to help them along. So it's all very big. It's not only this radio program, but it's our TV programs and our kind of our social service to humankind that is so very important. What does the word relative mean? Considered in relation or in proportion to something, existing or possessing a specific characteristic only in comparison to something else. Is this message relative? Is it something that the people can get their teeth into? Is it something that can affect them? I have three wonderful questions that were put to me about this very subject. It is an interesting subject to me because it has a lot to do with the way people think and believe, and we are at odds with ourselves. You see it in the political arena. You see it in the social arena. You see it against generations, one generation against another generation, and we are at odds with everything. So to me, anything that is relative brings about insight into why all this exists and what will be the level of my participation in all of this. So we're going to look at that. First question comes from Alex. He does not tell me where he lives. He says, do you think that meditation is relevant in this world? My parents called it a hippie thing. Alex. Well, you know, I hear this hippie thing all the time. I don't know where millennials get all this. I guess they watch YouTube too much and watch rock concerts in the 60s. And think that we were all sitting there in the mud meditating and listening to rock and roll and all of that. That meditation was a hippie thing. Haight-Ashbury, that it was a hippie thing. You know, to really understand those times, you have to understand that these were people who were trying to live from the inside out and make a revolution through the revelation of a deep and profound spiritual understanding. The Beatles sang about it even. But you must understand, Alex, this is all relative and relevant only to a person who is trying to understand how to transcend this earthly plane, how not to be a part of the yay and the nay of this world. And most people, they don't care about that. They think they know what's right. Just like my generation. I mean, you know, to be honest with you, here we are in this world the way it is because of the boomer generation. And I'm a boomer, and I understand it. I understand how disappointed any other generation underneath us must feel. And I am too. But this has been going on for centuries, all of this. And it's very painful when you start to think about the years and years and years that all of this kind of neglect, both in the ecology and in the humanistic form, have gone on over and over and over again. So you ask me, is meditation relevant to this world? And is it a, you know, can hippies be, as you said in your email, relevant to this world? I am not a hippie. I never was a hippie. I didn't see anything wrong with being a hippie. There were different classes of hippies, you know, different levels, like everything else, as there are different classes of Christians and all sorts of sects in religion. But the thing that I think was most important about it all is that in my generation, there are a few of us, a handful of us, who really saw that the only way to deal with this world is to transcend this world and not to get caught up in the rigmarole of a lifestyle and a world where everything was pertinent to desire, ambition, pride, vanity, all of that, DNA, genetics, where you started to see things from another light, from the authentic light that lives within. Few people in this day and age are much interested in any of that. So is meditation relevant to this world? In a social scheme, no. In a political scheme, absolutely not. In a religious scheme, no. It is not. So who is it or what is it relevant to? It is relevant to a person who is recognized the great teacher. And that great teacher is futility. I am not the great teacher. Futility is the great teacher. No one on this earth, Jesus, Buddha, Lhasa, they were teachers of the way. But the great teacher that all of us succumb to get to those teachers, has got to be futility. And if you don't recognize futility for what it is within yourself, if you don't understand the state of your own futility, you will never be able to appreciate an authentic spiritual practice at all. It just will not happen. Because you will think somewhere within you, you have the answers. You don't need this. You can live by the status quo, the collective unconscious, and you will be perfectly fine. And I don't even know what perfectly fine means anymore to most people. I think it means that you just get along, move along, live your life in accordance with your genetic nature, and live happy ever after, what you think will be happy ever after. And that never works. That just never works. I've had many students who came to me saying things like, I don't understand why I'm alive. I don't understand why I'm here. I don't understand why I'm so miserable and unhappy after 50, 60, almost 70 years of living. And they look back at their life and they see all the things they got to do and all the things they ate and all the places they went. And they think, well, I had a pretty good life. I had this one fellow think this. But yet he's filled with genetic depression and he's got all sorts. He's mentally ill. You just can't relate to him. Nobody relates to him but him. So you start to look at this person. He asks questions about, you know, why am I this way or why is life this way? You can't answer those questions with a person who doesn't want to realize the state of their mind. He lives with a troubled mind. He does not take care of his mind. The most important thing you can do. For those of you who are young, millennials, Gen Xers, all the way down, take care of your mind. Treat it with respect. Now, if you can't treat your body with respect and only do those things that benefit your health, then you're not going to be able to do it with your mind either. So smoking pot, drinking, getting drunk, getting high, all of those things do not help your physical body at all. And if you can't understand that, then you're not going to be able to understand what an untroubled mind is, or what a mind that is no longer troubled by right and wrong, good and bad, up and down, in and out. You're just never going to get it. So that is the issue. Is meditation relevant? Is it relative to the state of our life? Absolutely. It all depends on, I'm going to just say this, how intelligent you are and how far you have allowed the human mind to go. Go into fear, go into hate, go into pride, go into, you know, genetic logic and reasoning. Just all depends. Whatever your philosophy is about your life, that is usually what people will follow. Not a very happy or good thing for the earth. How do you, you know, I keep telling, you know, these young people, you're the ones, you know, drinking the water, throwing the bottles away. You're no better. You're not, you've given up. You don't have a surge of resistance against the establishment. What can we do? I can't do anything about it. Really? Come on. You got to raise enough stank, and get out of your own head crap and start living your life from a more healthy point of view, meditatively speaking, which is a mind not fighting with itself relative to the heart. Okay, I'm done with that. Alec, thank you for your beautiful question. I hope I answered it well for you. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next one is from Karen in Los Angeles. Greg, do you really think that Jesus and Buddha would be relevant in a day that we live in here and now with their teachings? They seem rather strange. Karen writes me often, and I enjoy her emails, and I enjoyed this one immensely. Karen, if a person really hears the Buddha, if a person can really hear Jesus, you are listening to another world. You are listening and reading from another existence that is beyond the confines of our human mind, our secular mind, our genetic mind. You are listening to otherworldly, the other shore. And if you can't relate to it, that doesn't mean that it's not relative and that it's not something that's deeply important. If you can't relate to it, it's not the teacher's fault. It's not the Buddha's fault. It's not Jesus' fault. It is my fault. If I can't understand that, it means just basically I'm too dense to get it. I have no humility within me, and it takes humility. It takes a relative molecular kind of feeling of futility to really understand that living from the biology of the Gregory, or in your case the Karen, is a futile experience that only leads to disappointment and misunderstanding. So I feel it is deeply important for us to be relative and relevant to a spiritual practice. And I find both Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu so deeply moving. They touch a part of my life that is beyond the molecular structure of the Gregory. And I start to see things in the light of a goodness, of a relativity of kindness, of compassion, of consciousness. To begin to understand the density of the Gregory that I live with. You can't change Gregory. You can't change Karen. And you must understand this. They're going to live in the cellar of your body, in your genetic nature, your DNA, and they're going to bitch and complain forever. I mean, forever. They're not going to be easy to deal with. They're not going to want nothing with all of their hearts, none of that. They want comfort and ease, reassurance. They don't want to die. They don't want to believe they're going to die. They don't want to think that there is any kind of repercussions for the things they do. They think they're always right. This is just the way they are. And they want to be entitled. And if a philosophy does not entitle the average person, the pedestrian mentality, with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, then they don't want anything to do with it. People go into meditation and listen to spiritual teachers basically to find out how they can be entitled to a better life. They don't listen to what it means to have self-observation, to live, to transcend the human body, to transcend the human logic and reasoning. They don't listen with that. They want entitlement. They want to eat, drink, and be merry, as Jesus said. And with that mentality, you can't help anyone. And you're not going to change this earthly experience with all of that. You're just not. So I've got to understand and come to some place within me where I look at my life from a different point of view. I have to see I have this earthly life, and I live in a relationship with, in myself, Gregory. How much I allow him to define my life, to tell me what I can and cannot do, what is relative to his living, what is important to his living, is truly foolish. And I don't do that. If you listen to your humanity, if you listen to your human heart, you're going to find that there is nothing but sorrow and pain in your life. And if you want to live in that manner, you have every right to do so, and you're going to find that most people do. But if you want to get beyond the density of the human mind and how it operates in past life experiences, in the biology of us, it's all there in our genetics as well. You want to transcend all of that and not live by the status quo, then you need to take a deep look at meditation and realize the teachings of Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, they're very relative. But they're only relevant and relative to those of us who meditate, who actually see the light, hear the tone, vibrate to compassion and love. What did Jesus say? You have to hunger and thirst after righteousness. Yes, hunger and thirst. That is a huge deal. And you have to admit, Karen, you probably don't hunger and thirst to spiritually awaken. I'm sure that that's not the first thing on the slate every day of your life. So you have to begin to see what is number one in your life, how you do want to live your life, what is the meaning of your livingness, and how to transcend right and wrong and good and bad and the sick mind that most of us have cultivated within our human and allowed to be the guiding light of our humanity. You have to be able to go past that. And most people, let's face it, between you and I, they're not going to do that. They're more interested in the news and in, you know, social justice and whatever they think of as moral, and they themselves will act immorally. You can't be even moral without some sense of consciousness, at least a little bit. And most people just aren't interested in that. So there you are, Karen. I hope that helped you. I hope it dignifies your question a little bit, because it was a good one. Please forgive me. Namaste. I never say what people want. I'm just notorious for this. I'm sorry I'm so out of sync with your need for logic and reasoning, whatever. Here's the last question. This is from Alan. Do you feel useful in this world? My parents listen to you and think you're a fool, Alan. Well, at least they listen, Alan. I mean, what the hell? I don't know where you live or who you are, but at least they're listening, and I'll take the fool. You know, none of this makes sense to the average person, to the pedestrian mentality who is thinking in terms of just right and wrong, good and bad. Anything I say can be, will be used against me in the form of disbelief, because most people realize they can't do any of this inner work. They know they can't do it, and they know they won't do it. So then they make fun of it, or make fun of me, or whatever. And that's fine. You know, that's relative to their IQ and their mental acuity of what they think is good and bad and better than and all of that other good stuff. So do I feel like I'm useful? You know, Alan, I chose your question because at times I question my usefulness. I don't have anything to say to a person who does not treasure spiritual awakening, does not appreciate the value of it. I'm hapless and hopeless to be able to relate to those of you who just listen to this and think, oh, I don't need that shit, and move on. I would agree with you, you probably don't, but it isn't shit. It's very important stuff, and the sad part is you don't appreciate the value of it. So do I feel useful in this world? No, and I don't. And I feel humbled to be here. I feel humbled to be able to share all this with you. I feel a deep humility towards love and kindness. I am moved by those who can tolerate listening to me. I really am very, very grateful for that. And to me, that is what it's all about, is can you hear me? Can you really listen to what I'm offering? Does all of this transcend what you believe in and what you think is good and bad, right and wrong? That to me is really what it's all about. So I feel very blessed that you're listening to me right now. I mean, let's face it, your parents think I'm an idiot, which might be true, but there you are. I mean, really, you have to look at it from the point of view that, you know, this isn't for everyone. Do you think, you know, Jesus was for everyone? Do you think Lao Tzu was for everyone? Do you think that Buddha was for everyone? No, they weren't. And they were very brave men who did very brave things and said some courageous stuff that most, you know, teachers or ministers would never say, because it would take away from the coffers of the church and make it impossible for them to survive. It's very difficult to survive in this world teaching this kind of stuff. So no, I don't always feel useful, and maybe your parents are right. Maybe I am a jackass, but whatever. Here I am, and I keep teaching after 49 years of doing this, and it is not always easy to do what I do, but I am totally devoted to the very best that lives within you, and everything I do, whether your parents understand it, Alan, or not, I do for you. I'm out of here. Thank you, Alan, for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, there we are. First one out of the gate. I got another one tomorrow you're going to really like. Have a beautiful one. Thank you for listening. And once again, please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.